Golden Parachutes. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So again, we come upon a term that sounds weird the first time you hear it, golden parachutes. It's not profane. What are golden parachutes?
Well, it's certainly one of those colorful deal terms, like poison pill, or you know, but it and it's very evocative. I mean, it's basically you're pulling the ripcord, you're jumping out of the plane or being thrown out of the plane, and you pull the ripcord and you've got a golden parachute. They're basically contracts that are entered into with the most senior executives of a company that provide for a payment of multiple of their salaries and bonuses, et cetera, in connection with a change of control transaction. They are typically structured in one of three ways. Executive might be given an unfettered right to resign their position following a change of control and collect whatever they're entitled to under the agreement. Those are called single-trigger golden parachutes. And alternatively, the executive might be able to trigger that chute only if there's been a change of control and he or she's been fired, or they have good reason to terminate the contract, and that's usually expressed in terms of somebody messing with their responsibilities or moving them around after the change in control. That's called a double trigger. And then finally, you'll sometimes see some hybrids that might allow an executive to terminate his or her employment within a specified window period that comes into play after a change of control. So, there'll be a period of time where the executive has an opportunity to check out the new situation, see if he or she is comfortable with it, and then trigger it. So, some sort of a modified single trigger arrangement. Compensation that's paid under here usually involves a severance payment that's equal to one, two, or more times the base salary and bonus that the executive has received. There's also typically some sort of provision for continuation of benefit coverage over the period that you're receiving payments under the agreement, but a lot of times all the awards that you have will vest automatically under equity plans or what have you. These things will vest. There are some unique tax issues associated with chutes, and anybody who works in M&A needs to keep them in mind. They're very complicated because if these things are too rich, and essentially more than three times what the IRS calls the base amount, which is essentially the average annual comp that person reported for the five prior years, there's a 20% excise tax that gets applied in a very draconian manner, the amounts that are paid are non-deductible by the company. So there's some very, very adverse tax consequences if you go over the limit. And sometimes you'll see people address those or try to address them through tax gross-ups and other mechanisms that are generally not well received by shareholders, to the extent that any of these things are well received. We'll talk about that later, but in any event.
So does anyone negotiate on the CEO's or other executives' behalf for the parachute, or does the I assume it's the board, the compensation committee.
Yeah, it depends. Right, it depends. I think sometimes you'll see someone who's hired as a CEO or a very senior person ask for a golden parachute as part of the employment arrangements when they join the company. But other times, as you suggest, the compensation committee may determine that it's appropriate to enter into these agreements with a CEO or a group of senior investors, or senior executives, I'm sorry, and that may be simply because the company realizes that an acquisition is possible in the future and wants to provide protection and security for these folks so that they can focus on their jobs and know that if that does come, they're going to be well taken care of. And sometimes it's part of the transaction planning process. Somebody has a deal in mind, they know they're going to be looking into it, it's part of the transaction planning to put these things in place.
So if an acquirer doesn't like a golden parachute when they're negotiating with the target, can they seek to reduce the level of payment or otherwise completely get rid of it?
Well, one of the things that these contracts are intended to do is give negotiating leverage to the executives to strike their own deals with the buyer. If a buyer wants somebody around, They think they're critical to the business, and they know that they have the ability to walk away and to trigger a shoot. That's a nice piece of leverage that they've got in their negotiations. If the buyer wants to retain them, then they'll negotiate new compensation arrangements and terms of employment that are acceptable to them. Otherwise, they're the only other alternative for them, frankly, is to adjust their valuation of the company to reflect them. And by the way, these aren't typically huge additions to the purchase price. You can almost view them as a separate termination fee, if you will, because according to some data that ProMeyer published, these things typically range in the neighborhood of 1% to 3% of deal value. So it's not an inconsequential amount, but it's not vast either, typically speaking, in comparison to the overall value of the deal.
Yeah, so they're like a breakup fee, and we do have a podcast on that topic.
Yep.
What about shareholders voting on parachutes? What is that all about?
Well, in private companies, you'll sometimes see a binding shareholder vote on parachutes, because if you get 75% vote in favor of the parachute, then all the bad tax consequences of them go away. Now, I'll tell you, I say sometimes because you really don't want to go there unless it's a sure thing. Because in order for the IRS to respect that vote, the person who's the beneficiary of the shoot has to essentially waive all their rights to receive it. It's not like, well, if the shareholder doesn't approve it, then I'll modify it or I will. Deal with the tax consequences. No, you basically have to say, if they don't approve it, I don't get it. So that's you will see a vote in private companies sometimes because it can cure a lot of the problems. But there's a significant downside, so you don't want to go to shareholders unless it's in the bag. Now, public company deals, as you know, there's an advisory vote on parachutes that the SEC put in at the same time it put in say on pay. Shareholders usually vote in favor of these things, although they do so at a significantly lower rate than their overall support of the mergers that they relate to. But again, I've looked at some data, and they've only been rejected. People only voted down these things on an advisory basis in around 5% of the deals since the SEC put the rules in place. And about 70% of the deals, the approval votes have exceeded 80%.
So it seems like altogether investors aren't willing to vote in favor of these parachutes, but
shareholders, the rationale for these things is that they make it easier to hire and retain top people, especially in industries where M&A is common and you're seeing a lot of consolidation. And they also, as I mentioned, that they make the executives more neutral in participating in the process. It promotes impartiality because they know they're financially taken care of no matter who ends up with the company. Now, these arguments are nice, and I think there's some validity to them, but I'm not naive enough. They're going to ring pretty hollow to shareholders who watch executives waddle up to the pay trough every year in the proxy statement, right? I mean, the basic counter to this is, well, these folks are extremely well compensated in many instances for the services they provide, and people don't want to cry an awful lot of crocodile tears for them. But shareholders may grumble, but they usually tolerate them unless they have features that push investor buttons. And those are more along the lines of, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered type of things. Payments of more than three times the base amount. So if you're ending up in excise tax land and you've got gross-ups on top of that and all sort of things like that, investors don't like that. Single trigger provisions, they're not crazy about. That's one of the things that many folks who've dealt with ISS and in dealing with new compensation arrangements, ISS will typically flag that as a reason for a negative vote or a negative recommendation, single trigger change of control arrangements. But still, the big institutions usually vote for these things, even though you read their policies, and we've blogged about this. Their policies might suggest that, these are a lot of the things that they don't like to see, but in the context of a deal, they usually fall in line and vote for them.
Great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.